scripture reading today comes from the book of 1 Samuel, beginning in the 9th chapter with verse number 1. There was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, a man of wealth. He had a son whose name was Saul, a handsome young man. There was not a man among the people of Israel more handsome than Saul. Saul stood head and shoulders above everyone else. Now, Saul came to visit the old prophet Samuel. And the day before Saul arrived, the Lord had revealed to Samuel, "Tomorrow about this time, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin, and you shall anoint him to be ruler over my people Israel. He shall save my people from the hand of the Philistines, for I have seen the suffering of my people because their outcry has come to me." And when Samuel saw Saul, the Lord told the old man, "Here is the one of whom I spoke. He it is who shall rule over my people." The Lord always blesses the reading of the Holy Word. If you want to read a collection of great stories, read 1 and 2 Samuel. These are stories that are personal, stories that are intimate, interesting characters. In fact, probably outside of the book of Genesis, there is no other collection in the Bible of great stories that we would find as we find in 1 and 2 Samuel. These are stories of triumph and tragedy and insight, and they include elements of family and intimacy. The book of 1 Samuel begins with the birth of Samuel, the guy the book is named after. And Samuel is a prophet and a priest, and we see Samuel's entire life before us as we read through 1 Samuel. Now while we're reading about Samuel, Saul makes an appearance, and Saul is the first king of Israel. And so the book of 1 Samuel tells us how Saul is discovered, and it describes his kingship. And before the book of 1 Samuel ends, we'll see the death of Saul. The book of 1 Samuel also gives us our first introduction to David. And so the three major characters then of 1 Samuel are Samuel and Saul, the first king of Israel, and David, who will be the second king of Israel. So we want to start by taking a look at Samuel. And when Samuel was born, his mother decided to loan him to the Lord. I'll let you read for yourself how that came about. But the way it worked, evidently, was this. She brought him to the priest and left him there for the priest to raise. In the modern church, we highly discourage that. We do not really... I really don't want you to bring your children to me to raise. Back in those days, this evidently was done from time to time. And so Hannah, the mother of Samuel, brings him to the old priest Eli, and Samuel grows up more or less as an apprentice to old Eli. Now, while Samuel is in the home of the priest, growing up in the parsonage, I guess you could say, he notices how corrupt and how ineffective the priests are in his day. He notices that most of the priests that he sees are just pretty stupid. They just don't get it, what's going on in the real world. He also noticed that so many of the priests seem to be greedy and selfish and more interested in getting what they can out of the people than in serving the people. And all of this Samuel takes in when he's a boy growing up in this setting. He sees all of the corruption, and he sees all of the things that are wrong. And as he becomes an adult, he develops a hard edge to his personality where he is determined that he's not going to be like that. He's not going to take advantage of people. He's not going to be corrupt. He's not going to take bribes. He's going to serve the people. He's going to do what God wants, no matter what he wants or no matter what anybody else wants. And as we see Samuel the adult, we see a fellow who's rather harsh and rather fierce because all of his life he seems to be reacting against the corruption that he saw growing up. He's a very holy man. He's a very obedient man. But he's not a very pleasant person. He, because he has that harsh edge to him, he's not a very loving person, and he's not a very joyful person. And Samuel, he becomes the new leader. He's the one who replaced the ineffective, corrupt priesthood that he saw when he was growing up. Now, Samuel was trusted by the people. I mean, he was rock solid. You could depend on him to do the right thing. And the people trusted him, but they also noticed that Samuel's sons did not have the same qualities that Samuel had, and they began to worry about their future. So they began to talk to Samuel about, Samuel, we need you to give us a king. Now, one of the things that was going on, you see, the people had not had a king before. And the reason that they hadn't had a king before is because God was more interested in the people following the rules than bowing down to a ruler. God was more interested in people holding the commandments in their heart than trying to march to the dictates of a commander. So the people didn't have a king in those days. From time to time, God would raise people up to lead them through difficulties, but God was not in favor of having a king. Remember, Moses, who was undoubtedly the most effective leader God's people ever had, Moses was never a king. It was always understood God and God alone is king. Jesus talked about the kingdom of God, for example. So, but the people, they saw that the nations around them had a king, and they decided they wanted a king, and they just badgered Samuel that they wanted a king. And so Samuel and God were talking, and Samuel says, I don't think a king's a good idea. And God says, no, a king is not a good idea. This is not God's plan for the people. But the people so harangued that they wanted a king that finally God says, okay, give them a king. But God said to Samuel, but set them down and warn them what the problems are going to be that they're going to face because they have a king. Warn them that when they get the king, that king is going to take their stuff, their land, their children, and make it his own. Warn them that when they get the king, when they set some ruler above them, that their lives are not going to get better. Their lives will be worse. And so Samuel gave them the warning, but it didn't faze the people. They wanted a king nevertheless. And so that's when we see Saul appear on the scene. God had had a conversation with Samuel, and God said, on this one particular day, God said, okay, tomorrow I'm going to send a guy your way, and that's the one that you're going to make the king over the Israelites. So the next day, in wanders the guy by the name of Saul, young man whose primary qualification is that he was taller than anybody else in the kingdom by a head and a shoulder. And Saul ends up wandering into Samuel's village because he has lost his asses. The family's asses have wandered away, and Saul has been sent out by his father to try to find them. And he can't seem to find them. He and his servant have been roaming the countryside, can't find the asses. And so the servant boy says, well, I hear there's a holy man over in this next town. Let's go ask him. Maybe he knows where they are. So that's how Saul shows up. And you're reading that and you're thinking to yourself, I don't think this is going to work out too well, that this is the guy that's going to be the first king of Israel. So Saul shows up and he asks Samuel for help in finding the family's livestock. And Samuel says, well, don't worry about the livestock. They went home on their own. You know, they've already returned home. You've been roaming the countryside for, you know, it's just been, you know, you've been wasting your time. But while you're here, I've got something else to talk to you about. So old Samuel tells Saul, the Lord's decided to make you king of Israel. And so a time is set where all of the people of Israel, all the men of Israel are supposed to come together from all 12 tribes, and they've been pleading for a king, and so a day is set when Samuel is going to reveal to them who the Lord has chosen to be their new king. So they all come together from all over, and they've traveled there. Some of them have had to travel a number of miles, so they've brought with them their provisions for food and sleeping gear and all of that. So this big meeting is held where Samuel's going to reveal who the new king is, and over here and over on the other side, there's all the baggage that they brought with them that's being kept. And the big meeting is held, and finally Samuel reveals that the new king is to be Saul. And everybody looks around and nobody can find him. Well, he should be easy to find, right? Because he's taller than anybody else. So that's why I like going places with Jordan, because I can find him in a crowd. You know, it's nice to travel with somebody that's tall. But they're looking around here and they can't see him. And it turns out he's hiding in the baggage. It's his moment to be crowned the king, but he's chickening out and he's hiding in the baggage. And if you weren't worried about the fact that he was out looking for lost asses, you're going to definitely be worried by this time that the guy's hiding in the baggage. And one of the things that we realize about Saul is that he's a man who is filled with anxieties and fears. He's not a bad person, but anxiety just gets the better of him. And so he's named king. Now he has some good moments. He wins a couple battles, and he's got some good people around him, particularly his son Jonathan, for example. But he has this anxiety, and it's the anxiety that he has that causes him to make bad decisions. That's not unusual. Anytime we feel highly anxious, our feelings usually will override our common sense. And that's what happened with Saul. His anxiety got the better of him over and over again, and Saul would make, out of his anxiety, he'd rush into a decision when he needed to hold back and think about it a little bit more. But his anxiety wouldn't let him be patient. It pushed him into rash decisions. And there were other times that his anxiety paralyzed him. And he needed to make a decision and he couldn't make a decision. Because he felt such anxiety. He felt overwhelmed to the point that he couldn't do anything. And so it wasn't long before Saul's leadership in the kingdom resulted in a great deal of tragedy. And they were losing battles and they were having all sorts of problems. And one day God and old Samuel are having a talk, and God says, I hate to say this, but I regret that I ever made Saul king. I just regret it. What an amazing thing. And God says, I've given him a spirit. I've given him a spirit to be the king, but I'm going to have to pull my spirit away from him. I'm going to have to find somebody else. I'm going to have to find a man more of my own heart to give my spirit to. This Saul is just not working out. His anxiety is making him unfit to lead the people. And so God did withdraw his spirit from Saul. Now, Saul continued to be officially the king of the people, but without the Spirit of God, we began to see some psychosis setting in with Saul. We began to see that he's very clearly a man who's mentally unstable. And so the kingdom is being ruled by somebody who's mentally unstable now. And you could imagine the people around him trying to scramble to try to figure out how to hold this thing together, when the leader didn't have everything there upstairs. And so they decided that they wanted to get some therapy for him. And This is before the days of Freud, of course, so music therapy seemed to work. So they searched the kingdom to see if they could find somebody who could play the stringed instruments, maybe sing some good songs, and maybe help soothe Saul's nerves when he would go off. And they found a lad down in Bethlehem by the name of David who could play the stringed instruments. And they brought him to Saul, and he lived in Saul's house, and he played the songs. And when David played, Saul would calm down. And it looked like maybe everything was going to be okay. Well, not for long. Here's the thing. The Israelites happened to be fighting the Philistines. The Philistines were the main enemy through the kinghood of Saul. And this particular season, there was a battle going on, and to say it was a battle is maybe a little over generous, because what would happen is the Philistines would climb up on one hill and the Israelites would climb up on another hill every morning, and they would shout insults at each other until it was lunchtime. Then they would all go off and eat lunch, and then they would climb the hill again in the afternoon, and they would shout more insults at each other, and when it was dinner time, they'd all stop for the day, and it just trash talk that was going on like this. And the problem, the problem came because the Philistines had this one particular guy. We're told that he was 9 feet tall. His name was Goliath, and Goliath would stand up on the hill, and he'd yell out at the Israelites, "Let's just settle this one-on-one. I'll fight for the Philistines, and you, just any of you that want to. Come on, somebody step up here and represent, who wants to represent the Israelites? We'll just do this one-on-one. If I win, then you guys become our slaves. If you can win, then we'll become your slaves. Let's just settle it." And every time Goliath would start that trash talk, the Israelites would just cower, and nobody wanted to fight him. Well, one day, the lad David was out there, and he heard this, and he felt embarrassed. How is it that Goliath can stand up and insult his country? How is it Goliath could stand up and insult his king? How is it Goliath could stand up and insult God, and nobody take him on? And David got to thinking, and he developed a strategy. He thought, I think I can take this guy. He figured out a way to do it. And by golly, he did. He killed Goliath. Now, the Israelites were ecstatic over that. People rejoiced. David became a hero. In fact, the women began to sing a song, and the song went something like this: "Saul has killed his thousands, but David has killed his 10,000s. Now, remember, Saul is mentally unstable. And when this happens, now we've got a huge problem on our hands, because the very guy that was capable of calming Saul down, now Saul is jealous of him. And Saul repeatedly tries to kill him. To complicate matters further, Saul's son, the king-to-be, the prince, is a fellow by the name of Jonathan, and Jonathan is David's best friend. And fortunately, Jonathan is able to warn David off, so that Saul can't kill David. And it turns out that David has to flee for his life, and he has to go and actually live with the Philistines in order to save his life. And he does that. Saul has not only alienated David, but Saul has alienated a number of other people who were disappointed, who were discontented, who were in debt. And so about 400 people go with David, and they form a military group, and they're living among the Philistines. Saul continued to make bad choices. In his anxiety, he continued to make strategic blunders, and he gets his army involved in a war against the Philistines. And one day, in the middle of an ill-advised battle, Saul's son Jonathan is killed. Saul's other sons are killed. Saul is wounded grievously, and rather than be killed by a Philistine, Saul decides to commit suicide. And that's how the book of 1 Samuel ends. David will become king, but not until next week when we take up 2 Samuel. So, as we're doing with all of these books, we want to ask the question, what's the bad news, what's the good news, what's the practical application of the book? The bad news, I think in 1 Samuel, the bad news is anxiety and what anxiety does to Saul and what anxiety does to us and what anxiety does whenever people who are trying to lead a family or an organization or a business or a country, what anxiety does that can be so destructive. And we see this with Saul. He's filled with anxiety. He's afraid to be king. He's afraid to not do anything until he hears from God. And then when he hears from God, he's afraid that maybe that won't work. He's afraid he's going to lose popularity. He's afraid that somebody's going to oppose him. He's afraid of his own shadow. And anxiety is nothing but imagination. Now, we need to have fear in our lives. Otherwise, we would maybe do a number of foolish things if we had no fear. The hymn says, 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear. And fear can be a gift of God when it gives us wisdom. But the hymn where we sang Amazing Grace, 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, that, you remember what the next line is? And grace my fears relieved. Because once fears get the better of us, and once they begin to control us, once our worry begins to control us, and once our anxiety begins to control us, then we begin to make choices where we hurt ourselves and we hurt other people as well. It's amazing how much power anxiety has in our world and in our lives. And it causes us to do things. It causes us to say things. It causes us to back off from opportunities and relationships and risks that we could take that would make our lives better. But in our anxiety, and sometimes anxiety causes us to act rashly, or it causes us to act, we're so uneasy with uncertainty, and our anxieties get the better of us, and sometimes we do things too quickly. And one of the biggest ways the devil seems to be able to work in our lives and in our world is through anxiety. And that's the bad news of 1 Samuel, is the anxiety that Saul has. It's a fascinating study of leaders to see the different, the main difference between Saul and David. David is not a better person than Saul. In fact, Saul probably is a better person. I mean, take a look at the stuff David does. Well, we will next week. I mean, David could be a real scoundrel. But why was David successful and Saul such a failure? The primary difference, it wasn't because David was better. It was because David didn't live his life out of anxiety and Saul did. Saul brought tragedy because of the anxiety. And that's the bad news of 1 Samuel. It's the anxiety. Now, the good news of 1 Samuel is this, that God raises up people. God raises up new people. God raises up new champions. God raises up people with new ideas. God raises up people who can find creative solutions to problems that have been nagging folks for a long time. That's the good news of 1 Samuel. There are more heroes in 1 Samuel than any other book of the Bible. When we read in 1 Samuel, we come across the likes of Hannah and Samuel himself and David and Abigail and Jonathan and Micah, who was the sister of Jonathan. The book of 1 Samuel is filled with heroes, people that God blesses. And due to the heroes that we see in 1 Samuel, the people have a way forward. Now, in the days of 1 Samuel, in spite of the heroes, the plenitude of heroes that we see, these were not the good old days. There were problems all the way through the times that 1 Samuel covers. There were problems with Elkanah and problems with Peninnah, people that were related to Samuel. There were problems with the old incompetent priest Eli and problems with his corrupt and ineffective sons Phinehas and Hophni. There were problems with Goliath and his menace and his disrespect of people. There were problems with Saul. There were problems with the Philistines. There were problems all around. These were not the good old days. But God raised up people and blessed them and gave them insight and gave them courage and helped them overcome the anxieties of the system to be able to do the right thing, to be able to understand what it is that God wanted. And the good news of 1 Samuel is that God never ever leaves his people without there being plenty of folks who have good ideas, who come in peace, who seek to serve God, who want to put the commands of God first, who want to serve the people rather than take advantage of the people. God never leaves any age bereft of people who are a blessing. And when we read 1 Samuel, and when we read the characters of 1 Samuel, it helps us to be able to see who the people are among us today that God has given us to help us through troubled and anxious times. A couple practical takeaways. Practical application. First of all, the practical advice that Samuel gives the people about the dangers of a king. Now, back in Bible times, religion and government were the same entity. Today, we've split them off. But the warning is as effective today as it was then. Anytime, and I say this as somebody who has benefited in a career of being a pastor of a religious institution. But any time that we have people whose career is based on a religious institution, or any time we have somebody whose career is based on a government institution, there is inevitably going to be a tendency of those people to want the institution to serve them rather than making decisions to serve the institution. This was the warning that is offered in 1 Samuel to the people. And I say that as somebody who's had decades of serving the church and realizing how difficult it is, because everything that I see going on in the church, I have to wrestle with. Is this, should I push in this direction? If I'm pushing in this direction, is that for the benefit of the people, or is that really for my benefit? It becomes very difficult, even for people that are conscientious, who are put in positions of leadership, and that's their career, to be able to make decisions every single time that are for the good of the people and not for their own good. And so this is a practical piece of warning here that we see in 1 Samuel. And it's a warning for all those who would work for the government. It's a warning for all those who would work for the church, that it becomes very, very easy to confuse what you're doing for the good of the people and what you're doing for your own good. It's very challenging to figure that out. We should never ignore that practical piece of advice that's in 1 Samuel. The other piece of practical advice in 1 Samuel comes in that delightful episode when David decides to take on Goliath. The giant Goliath and the lad David. And everybody is surprised that David's willing to fight Goliath, and so it's decided that David should wear the king's armor for that fight. And it's decided that David should carry the king's spear into that battle. And so David tries to put on Saul's armor, and he tries to carry Saul's spear, and he trips and falls over, and he can't, he has no mobility to do that. Well, It's not going to work, because you see, the very thing that David was good at was slinging stones with his slingshot. And the very thing that he had over Goliath was that he was fast and he was agile. Goliath had all this armor, and Goliath was plodding and couldn't run. David could outrun Goliath easily. But You see, David could not do what he needed to do if he tried to be Saul. He had to be himself. And over again, many of the times we find ourselves tripped up in our lives is because we're trying to be somebody we're not. Now, God made us to be who we are. And it's only when we get in touch with that that we can effectively do the things that God gives us to do. But every time we try to be somebody else, every time we try to be a mentor of ours was, who a parent of ours or a grandparent or somebody that we think of as a hero or somebody that we idolize, every time we try to be somebody else, we're going to trip up in trying to serve God. Now, this not only applies to individuals, it applies to individuals in another sense. As we age, we are different. We change. And I'm not the same as I was when I was 40. And I'm not the same as I was when I was 20. David is probably less than 20 in this particular story. We're going to see as he gets older, he's going to have other resources. He's not going to have to use a slingshot as he gets older. When he's in his 40s and he's in his 60s, he won't need a slingshot anymore. He's going to be a different kind of person. But at every stage, in order to live our lives effectively, we have to be who we are at the moment. And so, and it's not just with individuals, but it's with organizations and churches and everything else. If we as a church are going to be effective in serving God and in serving people, then we have to be who we are. We can't be imitating the church down the street. And every time I'm in a committee meeting and somebody says, well, maybe we ought to see what other people are doing, that immediately I cringe. Because we're not other people. We are who we are. We're who God has made us to be. God has made nobody else to be like us. We have gifts and we have strengths and we have abilities that God has given to us just like God gave to David. And our job is not to copy a church down the street or a church somewhere else that's successful. Our job is to accept who we are and learn who we are and be who we are. Not who we used to be a generation ago, but who we are now. And it was only when David got in touch with who he was and he acted out of that and the strengths and the agility and the powers that came with that, it was only when he was himself that he was able to do the work that was set before him. That's a very important practical application from the book of 1 Samuel when we see David rejecting the imitation of Saul and deciding to be who he was and acting out of that. If I seem enthusiastic about 1 Samuel, I am. It is a wonderful book. It's got tragedy, it's got comedy, it's got wisdom, it's got family struggles, it's got intimacy. It's the way God works among not just the people then, but it's so filled with truth and insight about the way God works today. And it's a blessing to us, and I hope you read it, but you read it quick because we're going to do 2 Samuel next week, and you don't want to, you want to follow along here and not get behind in the story.